You can be seated. How's everybody doing today? All right. Well, at least turn around and wave at a neighbor and say good morning, happy sunshine, or something. All right. Over here in this far left corner, somebody just got a date, which is a good thing. All right. Good things happen in church. Okay. Glad you're here today. If you're visiting with us, welcome. We're in an ongoing sermon series in the book of Nehemiah. And if you're familiar with him, he eventually goes back to Jerusalem to repair, to rebuild, and to restore the wall around Jerusalem. And that's what he's known for. But the truth is, that's not his biggest challenge. He has got to rebuild, repair, and restore the Jews living there, their faith and trust in God. So God will use him to use the wall to do that. So to kind of begin this morning, I want to tell you a true story. Late one night, about 1840, two slaves from Kentucky slipped out and off of their plantation. A husband and wife, they found their way on the Underground Railroad and made their way eventually to Canada, where they lived. After the war ended, while they were there, they had a son they named Elijah. And so they eventually returned to the States and settled in Michigan. The father found a job, was working hard. They sent their son to public schools. He did exceptionally well, so well that eventually, because of the father's income, they sent him off to college in Edinburgh, Scotland, where he majored in mechanical engineering. After he finished there, he returned to the States, but he could not find a job there in the area being an engineer. So he found two jobs, actually. One was to be a fireman, and the second was to work aboard a railway system helping run those cars. In those days, trains had to stop every so often because they had to be re-lubricated to keep everything working well. Well, he began to put his engineering mind together, and he actually invented a system that allowed for perpetual lubrication so the trains would not have to stop. He went on to get a patent in it, and he became a very successful inventor. He went on to have like 40-some patents and all kinds of things. You are indebted to him because he invented the first portable ironing board. He invented the first lawn sprinkler system. I mean, this guy was absolutely brilliant, okay? Now, people tried to mimic or copy his products, but they never could. They were so great. And as a result, people began to say, I don't want yours, I want his. And so we got a phrase in America today that we say as a result of this. His name is Elijah McCoy. So when you go to buy something and you see an imitation, you say, I don't want that. I want the what? Real McCoy. So now you've learned something this morning, all right? Now, I say that because when we look at the book of Nehemiah, he's the real McCoy. He's a genuine, authentic, transparent man in his life. And because of this, God's able to use him in ways that a lot of times God can't use us if we're not as transparent and real. We will see him with his greatest strengths. We will see him with his greatest weaknesses. We will see Nehemiah when he is strong and courageous as a lion, and we will see him when he is terrified as a mouse. We will see his flaws, his failures. We will see his fears. We'll see him exhibit lack of faith at times. And the reason I love this book is that it gives me great encouragement because he's just an ordinary man. There's nothing special about Nehemiah. And when I look at how God was able to use him with his flaws, his failures, his fears, his lack of faith, it gives me encouragement that God can use someone like me and he can use someone like us. He is one of us. And so we've been making our way through the book. We finished chapter 1, and today we're coming into chapter 2 of the book of Nehemiah. And when we look at his, there's no facade, there's no high spiritual language by Nehemiah. He's just the real McCoy of faith. That's all he is. And over, God will use him through this book to do some remarkable things. And if you remember, over the last couple of weeks in our series here, he's received some bad news. His brother, his biological brother, Hanani, has traveled over 800 miles across the desert, coming from Jerusalem to Susa, the capital of Persia, and has informed him of some very terrible conditions in the city of Jerusalem with the Jews and with the wall. When he hears this, he takes no immediate action, but he begins over a course of 4 months to ponder, to get himself preoccupied with a plan, to be develop passion for these folks. And so in your notes, you'll see this verse. It happened in the month of Chesleve, which is December, in the month of Nisan, April. So there's this four-month gap that he takes to get himself ready. And he also, during this 4 months, he spends a lot of time in prayer. He is praying and asking God to give him an opportunity to ask his boss, King Artaxerxes, for permission to go back to Jerusalem and to do something there. He doesn't have some immediate knee-jerk reaction like sometimes we do when we see a problem. He wants God to use him in the right way, at the right time, with the right people, with the right attitude, so that God gets the right reaction. So in your notes this morning, I find this section really helpful to all of us because there are times you're going to have a need in your life. You can't do this by yourself. But God will bring people into your life to help you meet that need. So that's where we are today. So how can we live authentic, transparent lives so that God can help us with a need? If you want him to do this, you need to do the very first point here on the screen. I must be ready for a sudden opportunity to show and share my pain. And he's going to get this in a moment. He's going to be absolutely shocked in a moment when this opportunity comes. He didn't see it coming. He's been planning, praying for 4 months that God would open up a door for him. And all of a sudden, without any warning, God does. Now look at your verse there. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now, I'd not been sad in his presence. And that's amazing. Over 4 months, he's kept this hidden. No one has seen him sad. No one has seen him depressed. He comes to work. He does his job. He puts on a great act. He smiles. He's cordial. He's friendly. But up to this point, he's been praying. He's been plotting. He's been asking God, open up a door for me so I can talk to the king about this. Up to this point, he's been very vigilant about praying and asking God to do things for him. So he's very transparent. Up to this point, he has said nothing. And if you were to look at his life up to this point, he would be given an Oscar performance. Think about this. Every Sunday we come here. Every Sunday we come here. Have you ever had this happen? Have you ever waited month after month for an answer from God or year after year for God to give you an answer? Of course you have. But let me ask you this. When you go to church on Sunday morning, whether it's here or somewhere else, do you come in your church and share your flaws, your failures, your fears, and your lack of faith? Are you transparent? No, we don't do that, do we? We all win an Oscar. Some of you had a fight in the car in the parking lot before you walked in the door. And I could walk up to you, how are things? Oh, Pastor Kelly, we're doing great. It's awesome. Praise God, we're here today. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Nehemiah, the reason God helped him, he was transparent. He was open. He was honest. He was authentic. And especially when you're wanting God to give you an answer to a prayer, to a need, the best way to get him to do that is you got to be open and real and authentic and transparent. And Nehemiah has been battling. He's been battling this for a long time. He's been praying, God, help me find the time to bring this issue up to the king. And for 4 months, he's been doing this. And the longer the time went, it seemed like it was going to happen. And that may be true for you. God sometimes allows us to feel as if we're in some type of emotional or spiritual prison for a greater good that we cannot see at that time. A good example is Acts 16. Paul and Silas have been preaching. The religious leaders turn on them. They have them beaten and flogged with rods, have them thrown in the deepest part of the prison, put in shackles. Now, you got to realize, when I say prison, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking our prisons today. No, 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 no. Back in those days, there were no bathrooms in your cell room. There was no lights. So Paul and Silas are shackled into the deepest part of the prison. And in there are other prisoners, human waste all over the place. There are rats. It's not a pleasant place to be. And what was their reaction? Was their reaction to say, God, is this the thanks we get for preaching for you? No, you know what they did? They saw this as an opportunity for a greater good. Do you know what they did? They started singing hymns to God. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. And you know what God did? I love this story. God caused an earthquake. And the earthquake caused all of the prison doors to open and all the shackles on every single prisoner to fall off. Now, in those days, if a prisoner escaped, Rome executed the jailer. Paul and Silas step out of their cell, and they see the jailer with a sword getting ready to thrust himself and kill himself. And they yell out at him, "Don't do this. Don't do this." Now, look at the passage here in Acts 16. And the jailer called for lights and rushed in, and trembling with fear, he fell down before Paul and Silas. And then he brought them out and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be what? Saved." And they said, "Believe in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." And they spoke the word of the Lord to him and to all who were in his house. The greater good, the reason God had them there, is that man and his family came to Jesus Christ. Sometimes God allows you in this emotional, spiritual prison for a greater good. And if you will just wait on him, you will experience it. And you know what the best part is? Other people will too. So being real and being authentic, being transparent, lays the groundwork for God to work in our lives. Now, up to this point, not even the king knew that Nehemiah was troubled about anything. Look at chapter 2, verse 1 through 2. "Now, I had not been sad in his presence, and the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad, seeing you're not sick? There's nothing but sadness of your heart.'" Now, if you know, if you could study Persian culture and how kings were, the king is not so much curious as he is suspicious. Why? For 4 months, Nehemiah has kept this hidden from him. He's been praying, "God, give me an opportunity so that I can approach the king." He didn't ask God to work in the king to approach him. Why? Because he wants to be in control. And if you want God to work in your life, you got to give up control. You got to even let him work people's hearts. And so all of a sudden, God works in the heart of King Artaxerxes to see the sadness on Nehemiah's face. And Nehemiah is shocked, because he knows the king is suspicious of his sadness. And I'm going to tell you three reasons in a minute why the king would have been suspicious. All of a sudden, he can't hide it anymore. Everybody has a breaking point. And there may be times you come to church and you can't hide it anymore. You know what? That's okay. That's why we're here. King Artaxerxes noticed a change in Nehemiah's countenance and in his face. And when I was thinking about this, I thought, wouldn't this have been great that when King Artaxerxes says, "Well, Nehemiah, what's wrong?" Nehemiah could have said, "Well, Art, I'm glad you asked. I've been wanting to tell you this." That's not his reaction. Look at his reaction. "Then I was very much," what? "Afraid." He has very good reason to be afraid. The word is actually fear for your life. The Hebrew word translated as sad is ra'im. It can also be used metaphorically in Hebrew to refer to a bad and evil heart. The king suspects something is up here. What is Nehemiah hiding from me? Why would he not tell me? Any change in Nehemiah's countenance would have aroused the king's suspicion. So let me give you three reasons why the king would have been suspicious. It could lead to the king to suspect that Nehemiah's loyalty to the king had been shifted so bad by his evil heart to conspire with others to assassinate the king. King Artaxerxes' father, King Xerxes, had been assassinated. This is how he became king. And so looking, maybe he thinks Nehemiah's, he's part of a conspiracy plot here to kill me, to assassinate me. And he's nervous. He's anxious. He can't hide it anymore. That would be one reason. Here's a second reason he was suspicious. We also know that from history that suspects who were melancholic or noticeably sad in the presence of a king were usually killed for raining on the king's parade. Court etiquette required that anyone who was in the king's presence had to have a joyful and cheerful countenance. For failure to do that, you faced execution. So then all of a sudden, Nehemiah goes, oh no, he sees I'm sad. He's going to kill me for this. Because I'm supposed to be here joyful and happy and acting like everything's going great. I'm a dead man. He may also fear that now the king's asking what's wrong. If he tells him, he may fear that the king might say, no, you can't go to Jerusalem. And it probably was all three. Have you ever had one of those days? I mean, it's a great day. I mean, everything's going wonderful. I mean, it's just fantastic. You're on a high. I mean, you're singing that little song, zippity-doo-da, zippity-a. My, oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine coming my way. Zippity-doo-da, zippity-a. Did y'all like that? But have you ever had one of those? And I mean, it's great. You're fantastic. And then somebody has the gall to rain on your parade. They say something to you. They do something to you. And all of a sudden, your countenance changes. And when that happens, you know how you react? Same way the king did. You're angry. You get angry. That's what happens. So perceiving the king's anger and suspicion, Nehemiah, I love this next verse. He suspects, I'm cooked, I'm dead. Look what he says next. Let the king live forever. Meaning, I'm not part of an assassination plot. It's not what you're thinking, king. There's no poison in your food. Yes, I'm supposed to. I drink, eat your food to make sure there's nobody's poisoned you. You're fine. Nobody's trying to kill you. No. You got this whole thing wrong here. So Artaxerxes says, all right, tell me the truth. Look at Nehemiah's response. Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? Now, I want you to see how he worded this. King Artaxerxes is the king over Persia, which means Persia conquered Babylon, Assyria, Israel, and Judah. So all of this land and all the inhabitants belong to King Artaxerxes. They are his personal property and his personal slaves. Notice he didn't use the word Jerusalem. He saves the king some embarrassment here and shame. Instead of saying Jerusalem, he just says, the place where my fathers are buried is in disrepair. And so he doesn't make it personal for the king. He doesn't make it political for the king. He has a great way of responding back to the king because he knows this king. History tells us that Artaxerxes was one of the most narcissistic, paranoid kings. He slaughtered people left and right if he just didn't like the way they looked at him. He's been praying, Nehemiah, for 4 months for God to give him an opportunity. And all of a sudden, it's there and he is shocked because he didn't control it. That may be some of you. You've had something tense you wanted to bring up with a spouse, with an adult child who's gone off the way, or maybe with a coworker or a neighbor or a friend or a schoolmate or a sibling, and you've been praying, God, give me the opportunity to bring this up. Give me an opportunity to bring it up. And before you know it, they bring it up. And all of a sudden, now you've got an opportunity of how you will respond. Will you be real about this? Or will you rail against being honest? Will you be transparent or tricky? Will you be honest? Or will you be hidden with your true feelings? Nehemiah is the real McCoy. He just throws it out there. King Artaxerxes, where my fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers are buried, that city is devastated and destroyed. I've received bad news about this. I would just like permission to go back and do something. It's your property. All I'm doing is talking about fixing up your property. Would you let me do it? So let's see what happens. If you want God to bring help to you, you got to be real. You got to be authentic. You got to be that real McCoy. Here's the second thing you need to do. I need to be ready for a surprising offer of help. I mean, Nehemiah is scared to death. Notice Nehemiah didn't ask the king for anything at this point. He just simply told the king what was troubling him. Now look at the rest of the first part of verse 4. Then the king said to me, okay, what are you requesting? The king all of a sudden senses, all right, it's not assassination plot. All right, he wants to go back and do something. He wants to do something. I'll just ask him what it is. One of my favorite verses is Proverbs 21:1. It says this: the king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. And if you could read Hebrew, I want to show you a couple of Hebrew words here, what they mean. In that verse there, in the original Hebrew, it does not begin with the king's heart. It begins with another Hebrew word, pelek, which is a Hebrew word for channels, a reference to small irrigation ditches that run from a main reservoir out to a dry and deserted area that feeds crops and fields and etc. It literally begins with the word channels. So, if that's the case, I want to rewrite this verse for you. Like irrigation canals or channels that carry water is the heart of the king in Yahweh's hands. So I told you, Nehemiah is one of the few in the Bible, the Old Testament, uses God's most holiest of names, according to Jews, Yahweh. It is a name that refers that God is omnipotent. He's all-powerful. He's omniscient. He's all-knowing. He knows the past, the present, the future. He's everywhere, omnipresent. There's no place you can go in this universe where he is not. It also is a word that refers to God's sovereignty. God created this universe. He's over this universe. And everything in this universe answers back to him. But there's another interesting word here in the Proverbs 21:1 is the Hebrew word yat, translated as turn. It literally means to bend. It literally means to bend. So let's look at it this way. Like irrigation canals carrying water, so is the heart of the king in Yahweh's hand. He causes it to bend in whatever direction he pleases. And what's true with a king is true with a president, it's true with House of Representatives, it's true with senators, it's true with the mayor, it's true with your spouse, it's true with those kids that have not come to the Lord. God can bend their heart. Like irrigation canals carrying water, so is the heart of anyone in Yahweh's hand. He causes their heart to bend in whatever direction he pleases. I've been very concerned for generation after generation. Our kids coming through our public school systems have been fed with the grossest lies ever. Lies like evolution, self-reliance, acceptance of any kind of immoral lifestyle. This attitude, I'm entitled to something, even atheism and pantheism. And no matter how much those who advocate these ideologies, these false lies, here's what's interesting. There's a younger generation coming up now that are finding that these lies are not satisfying. They're not fulfilling. They're not paying out what they claim they would do. A couple of weeks ago in Kentucky in Ashbury College, just a normal chapel service, a revival broke out. Kids were coming. College kids were giving their life to Christ. They were recommitting their life to Christ. And it began to spread across the country. Just last week at UNCW, the same thing happened. It's happening after college campus, after college campus, after college campus, after college campus. You know what that tells me? Like irrigation canals carrying water, so is the heart of college students in Yahweh's hand. He causes their hearts to bend in whatever direction he pleases. They have tried to stomp it. They've tried to stomp it out. Listen to me. There's a revival going on among the young that we need to help them with and to celebrate it with them. They're coming to Christ. They have discovered they've been fed lies. And they want something that's real, that's authentic, that's transparent. So let's help them get it. If you want God to bring you help, you got to be real. You got to be authentic. You got to be transparent. So here's the third thing you need to do. Each of these is one step upon the other. Follow the order which this happens. I offer a short prayer at that moment to God as to what help I need. Nehemiah's gone in. He can't hide it anymore. This isn't when he wanted to tell the king. All of a sudden the king says, "You're sad. Why?" Look at what it says here, the last part of verse 4. So I prayed to the God of heaven. History has shown us that King Artaxerxes was narcissistic. He was egotistical. He would kill people without even flinching. And when I read that, I thought, Nehemiah is like us. He hollered out one short little Hebrew word that you've hollered out. Hey! That's what he does. He offers his silent prayer to God right there on the spot. One of what I call these SOS prayers. He just throws it up. The king doesn't sit, but Nehemiah's praying. He's shaking in his boots. And we don't know what he prayed. He doesn't tell us, but we do know what he prayed back in chapter 1. Here's what he prayed then. Oh, Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in the fear of your name and give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Nehemiah's been praying this over and over. God, give me an opportunity. Give me an opportunity. But see, he wanted to control when it was. God switched it. Remember what I said earlier? He's been praying for this for 4 months. So I have a question for you. How many of you would say that when it comes to waiting, you're the most patient person in the world? We're not patient, are we? We want it yesterday. And when it comes to God, we keep praying. And it's natural for us to think God doesn't care. God isn't going to help me. So what does Nehemiah do? He keeps pushing forward in prayer for 4 months. And remember what I showed you last week. To help him do that, he quoted Old Testament scriptures that were promises from God to remind himself that if God did this for these people, he would do it for him. This is why knowing the Word of God is so important. When you are having doubts, when you don't think God's going to come through, this is why you need to know His Word. His Word is full of promises. And you go back and you see, God did this for them. He did this, He did this, He did this, and this. He kept His Word. And guess what? He'll keep His Word to you too. One of my favorite verses is Lamentations 3:25. The Lord is good to those who what? Wait for Him. To the soul who seeks Him. Psalm 27:14 says, wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. Remember, it's not the length of the prayer that impresses God. It's the loyalty of the prayer. And there are many times you have received some horrible news. And right there, you threw up an SOS to God. You just started praying. That's Nehemiah. I heard about a security Christian security police officer. He did off-duty work for the mall. He had a harrowing experience one day. He was in his police car on the third level of the parking garage when he got an alarm that somebody had stolen something out of a clothing store. And right then, the thief came running across his third level of the parking garage. He immediately jumped out of his car and hollered, halt, which the guy just took off even more. And the guy's running, and he's running at him. He's going as fast as he can, fast as he can. And he said, all of a sudden, we run up to the railing here of this third balcony, third floor parking garage. And he said, I remembered that part of this garage is underground. And so just below is about 5 feet down is the grass. He said, the guy just went, boop, right over. He said, see? He said, I was a little further down, and I went over, but I was falling 22 feet down to the pavement. He said, on my way down, I was throwing up an SOS. God, please don't let me die. He didn't. He broke his leg. But he thanked God for that. And that's you and me at times. All of a sudden, bad news comes and we're falling as a result of it. We just throw up a prayer to God. Some of you, you've had your boss call you into his office or her office. And you're standing there, you're worried, what's the news? Or you've had a teacher to call you, say, can we have a parent-teacher conference? And all of a sudden, you're worried. Or you're waiting on those medical reports to come back, and all of a sudden, you look down at the doctor's office, and you answer, we have your lab results. And you're worried. Nehemiah is real, and he's transparent, and because of that, God answered his prayer. He's terrified. So he just throws up this quick prayer, God, help me right now. And here's my point. A short prayer is best preceded by consistent praying. The key to effective praying before God is not the length, but the loyalty of it. And when you walk with God moment by moment, day by day, week by week, you can throw up those quick SOS prayers because you've been praying to God all along. That's Nehemiah. He's been praying for 4 months. Over and over, over and over. And all of a sudden the king says, all right, what's troubling you? The next verse is, so I prayed to God right there. If you want God to bring you help with a need, You got to be real. You got to be transparent. And here's how you do it. I submissively appeal to others with my real needs, not my wants. And Nehemiah does this here. I'm not splitting hairs here. I looked this up. Is there a difference between needs and wants? Yes. A need is the basic things you need to survive. Food, clothing, shelter. A want is a Lamborghini. It's a yacht. It's winning the lottery. You can live without that. Nehemiah just gives the basic needs. Look what he says in verse 5. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if, notice the ifs here, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. All of a sudden, he is shocked that the king has asked, what do you want? So he lays it out there. He just tells him the basic need. I want to fix the wall. Here's a fifth thing you got to do, which he does. I wait to see if there's any other subtle influences God has to help me. Sometimes the person is offering you help, God will also bring someone else to help you with it. I find this part here so awesome. Look at it. And the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, how long will you be gone and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me when I'd given him a time. Think about this. Artaxerxes trusts Nehemiah to be his official wine and food taster. If he lets him go, he now has to learn to trust another food taster. This is big for this king to let this man go. But Nehemiah's been praying for God to work in the heart of the king to give him that opportunity. And so King Artaxerxes says, all right, Nehemiah, if I grant you this, how long do you think you'll be gone? When do you think you'll return to me to serve me back here as my cupbearer? Well, we kind of have an initial understanding of how long it took them to rebuild the wall. Look at Nehemiah 6:15. So on October 2nd, the wall was finished just 52 days after we had begun. So it took them 52 days, 2 months, to rebuild that whole wall. So it takes about a month to walk across the desert, 2 months to rebuild the wall, a month to walk back. So maybe Nehemiah initially said, 4 to 6 months, King Artaxerxes. And what we will learn later in the book, once he gets there, he thinks he's there for 4 to 6 months. No, because he has done such a great job, Artaxerxes appoints him governor over Judah and Jerusalem, and he's there for 12 more years. Kind of sounds like Rossi when he's trying to get back. Did you hear about that? He got to Hawaii coming back from North Vietnam this week, and the taxi cab messed him up. He missed his flight. Then had to go in and rebook it all over again to get all the way back to Wilmington. You ever had that happen to you? You get there, you're ready, and they go, sorry, can't fly. He doesn't know at this point he's going to be there for 12 more years. How many of you have ever had to remodel, repaint, do some renovation in your house, and it went exactly to the cost and the way you thought it would? If that's never happened to you, talk to Hunter and Ashland. They've got a great testimony about the plumbing problems in their house, all right? That's true for us. We've had that happen in our own house. Several years ago, we were taking a Sunday afternoon nap. It was August 9th, 2020, and around 2:30, lightning hit our chimney. And all of a sudden, our chimney exploded. And part of those bricks came through our roof and came through the ceiling in our bedroom area. Anything that was plugged in was gone. Every electrical thing was fried. Everything. We looked at light switches and plugs. There were charred marks all around them. It fried every circuit board in my Tahoe out in the garage. But then our insurance company jumped right in. But then we had to deal with the COVID problem. It took a year and a half just to get the bricks to rebuild the chimney alone. And every time I would call the foreman up, go talk to the foreman, how long do you think it's going to be? It was always much longer than we thought. But if it hadn't been for some people here in our church and other folks, I don't know what we'd have done. We first went out with our dogs and Emmy, got in a little quick hotel room to stay. And then the next week, Chris and Nancy Terrasse, who are part of our church, they offered us her mother's home. Her mother had passed away. They said, hey, just take our home for her home for a week. So we went there. Then our insurance kicked in and got us an Airbnb over behind Best Buy, and we were there for the rest of the time. Here's what I've discovered. Things never go the way you plan. So why are we shocked when they don't? They just don't. I want you to see the subtle influence here. And the king said to me, with the queen sitting beside him, this is a major influencer here. And if you understand, if you know anything about Persian hierarchy, in Persia, the queens never sat next to the king. In fact, in Persia, the king's throne was lifted way up so that when you walked into him, you're looking up at the king. This is unusual for a Persian king to have a queen sitting next to him. So what is this a reference to? This could be a reference to a queen whose husband, the king, had died. This could also be a reference to a queen, to a former king who had died, but now she's the stepmother to the new king. But you know who this is? It's Esther. She is older. She is now the queen mother. She had been married to his father, King Xerxes. She had been Xerxes' queen. And Xerxes grew to trust her and her wisdom. And so Artaxerxes has valued that as well. So he has her sitting next to her, which means she's helping him decide issues of court and state along with himself. This is a remarkable thing because, get this, she's Jewish, Nehemiah's Jewish. So now you understand how he gets to go back to Judah. A Jewish queen works on the heart of a Persian king, and like channels in the water, God gets his way done. King Xerxes, Artaxerxes, is so willing to help Nehemiah with such a request, he's willing to do something else. He's willing to pay for the whole project, which is amazing to me. So let me show you a sixth step you got to take. If you want God to bring you help with a need, you got to be authentic, you got to be real, you got to be transparent. I need to have a solid plan for people to help me. For 4 months, Nehemiah has been planning and plotting. What do I need to do if I get to go back there? How do I do this? How do I organize people? How do I get supplies? How do I do all this stuff? He didn't just come up with something on the spot. He's been planning this for 4 months. Look at verse 7. If it pleases the king, here comes his plan. Let letters be given me to the governors of the province beyond the river, that they may let me pass through till I come to Judah. There's sentry points he's got to get through. And a letter to Asaph, who is the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple and for the walls of the city and for the house that I shall occupy. So he's going to rebuild the wall, he's going to finish the temple, and he's going to build himself a house. Now, the Hebrew text seems to imply that Nehemiah has never built anything. So what has he been doing? The Hebrew text implies that he's been talking to builders in Persia to get advice. How do I do this? What am I going to need to do this? So Nehemiah just presents this straight to Artaxerxes. Artaxerxes says, hey, you've thought this thing through. You've talked to the right people. Sure, I'll let you go. Look at Proverbs 16:7. When a person is trying to please God, God can make even their worst enemies to be at peace with them. You see, technically, Artaxerxes and Nehemiah are enemies. Nehemiah is a slave. But God has worked in the heart of this king to change him. He asked the king if the king will provide not only to let him go, he asked the king, will you pay for all of it? So when he gets back there, you know what he's going to do? He's going to do like Ezra did. He will go to the forest in Lebanon, which was the king's royal forest, and get the timbers and bring them back. Get this. King Artaxerxes is going to pay for the whole project. This is amazing to me. You know, Audrey and I for years have wanted to take part of our deck and enclose it, you know, get it all done. Be nice to be able to sit out there no matter what the weather is. We got builders in our church. So let's say I came to one of you builders and I say, hey, you know, what do you think is going to be necessary? What do you think it's going to cost? And they tell me. And they go, and I look at them and said, hey, would you pay for the whole thing? He asked the king to pay for it. And the king says, I will. The heart of the king, the heart of your friends, the heart of that lost person, it's like water in the channels for God to bend and to change and to move if you will trust him to do it. You see, when I thought about this, Nehemiah's plan, it's almost a little girl who comes to her father, teenage girl, and says, Daddy, Mom and I are going to go out to shopping, so I need some money. What do you need for? Well, I'm going to buy some new pants. Okay. Here's some money for new pants. She walks away, comes back. Oh, well, Daddy, now I think about it. I'm going to need a new top. I'm going to need some new shoes. I'm going to need this. I'm going to need that. And Daddy does what? Gives it over. What I love about this story is that God has worked in the heart of the king without Nehemiah even knowing about it. So when he gets back and he hands these letters sealed with the king to Asaph, who is in control of the king's lumber, Asaph is shocked. He cannot believe the king is doing this. This would be tantamount. You know, we're talking about doing a little renovation project here. Let's say that Dennis and Larry, some of the other builders, Keith, go down and meet with the board, and they give all this stuff to the city. Here's our plans. Here's the blueprints and all this. And the city goes, we love that. We love that. Guess what? We will pay for it. That would be a miracle, wouldn't it? But that's what happens here. Nehemiah starts out as just a cupbearer to the king. He becomes a construction engineer and eventually governor over Judah. Why? Because he's the real McCoy. So let me give you a couple of points as I wrap up here for application. Trust that God's delays are not necessarily denials. For 4 months, Nehemiah has been praying, and heaven has been silent. He's prayed. He's asked God to give him the opportunity to approach the king about this, and it never has happened. He's prayed this in Nehemiah 1:11, O Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those who delight in honoring you. Please grant me success today by making the king favorable to me. Put into his heart to be kind to me. What could have seemed as a denial actually was simply a delay. Because God was working behind the scenes in Nehemiah's life to lay the groundwork for this. Let me remind you again what the verse you've already read. In the month of Kislev, meaning November or December, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was at the fortress of Susa. Early the following spring, in the month of Nisan, which is April, during the 20th year, so there's this four-month gap. He's been praying and praying and praying and praying. His brothers traveled over 800 miles to bring him this bad news. He's been praying. So why did God delay? It's the same reason he delays for you and he delays for me. Before God could do anything through Nehemiah, God had to do something in Nehemiah. God was not just preparing Jerusalem for Nehemiah. God was preparing Nehemiah for Jerusalem. Emmy, where are you? Come on up here, baby. Some of you know I've had a little medical procedure involving this loop link in my chest. I had to have it replaced. It's nothing major, nothing serious. But I'm not allowed to pick up anything more than 5 pounds. So for last week and this week, my family's my little personal servants. Okay? And going on this trip this afternoon and tomorrow, Hunter will be my personal servant, carrying my computer bag and all this. He's great at doing that, all right? But I wanted to bring Emmy up here because this is about her. For 10 years, we tried to adopt. I went back and looked at these books and make sure I had the dates right. We first started with Brazil in March of 2005. That's all the paperwork that we filed with the United States, adoption agency, and the country of Brazil. We tried and we tried and we tried. And about a year and a half later, Brazil said, we're shutting down all adoptions. So that means all of our money, all of our energy, all of our hopes went gone. So then we thought, well, let's try a different country. We went with Guatemala in October 2006, throwing money. Like crazy. Forms after forms. Background checks after background checks. Over and over and over. And we were constantly told by our agency, oh, God's children, be patient. You're going to get some children. Just be patient. But after 4 years, Guatemala shut down all adoptions. And I got to be honest with you. There was a time when I was praying, I thought, God, are you not going to do this? all Aldrin and I want is just a child to raise, to watch that child grow up in the admonition of the Lord, give her life or his life to Jesus Christ, and then live their life for the glory of God. God, that's all we're asking. It was something passionate in our heart. And there were moments I had doubts. There were moments I just said, let's just stop. We're out of so much money already. By this point, we're up to about $60,000. That's gone. Because you see, when the country shut down, you don't get a refund. It's gone. But it was just a delay, not a denial. So God directed us to Bulgaria. In March of 2010, we filed our first paperwork. Okay? And then about 5 years later, we flew over in the fall 2014. We got introduced to Emmy. We had a translator. They let us have a little one-on-one with her. Okay? Now, you got to realize there's a history here. Okay? They told her that you, what?
No choice.
She had no choice. She had to do it. She's 13 years old. She's given up all of her friends, her school, her language, her culture, her food, everything she's ever known. To go to two people she doesn't even know. There's a picture I could have shown you coming back on the plane. She's looking out of the plane, and she told us later, I was just crying. I was crying. When we got home that first night, she told us later, that first night, you thought after you went to bed what?
You were going to kill me in my sleep.
She thought we were going to kill her in her sleep. Now, how's that? This girl is terrified. She thinks we've spent all this money to bring her home to kill her. But you see, it wasn't a denial. It was just a delay. And if you will trust God, you will get to experience the fulfillment of the delay. This girl has given her heart to Christ. She shares her faith everywhere she goes. She's a little vet tech. Her mama now ask her about our dogs. I mean, what should we do with this? How do we do this? God is using her in ways we never could imagine. I'm so proud of this girl, but you know more? I'm so proud of God that we didn't give up. It was just a delay. Thank you, sweetie. Thank you. Now, there may have been times you raising your kids or your parents, you thought they were going to kill you two in the middle of the night, you know? But you got to realize, she lost everything. She didn't even speak English. We use Google Translate for everything. We'd type it in Bulgarian, translate it. I mean, type it in English, translate in Bulgarian. She'd take our phone, translate in Bulgarian, put it in English. That's how we did stuff for months and months and months. All the time. She's fearing, they're going to kill me. They're going to kill me. But even Emmy couldn't understand that what seemed like fear, God was going to grow faith in her heart. Here's the second thing you do. Refuse to take credit for when God answers your prayer. Everything good in your life, everything whole in your life, is not by your doing. It's all by the hand of God. The skills, the talents you have, the education you have, everything good in your life is by God's hands. Look at James 1:17. Every gift God freely gives us is good and whole and sufficient and enough. Each gift streams down from the Father of lights, who shines from the heavens with no hidden shadow or darkness and is never subject to change. I want you to see how Nehemiah does this. Look at the last part of verse 8. And the king granted these requests. Notice, here's the credit to God, because the gracious hand of God was on me. Nehemiah gives all of the credit to God that God had worked in the king's heart. God had been sovereign. God had kept his word. Some of you that are younger won't know this name, but those of us in my generation, we know the name of G. Gordon Liddy. Remember him? G. Gordon Liddy was part of the Watergate scandal involving former President Richard Nixon. When he was released from prison, he went before the microphones, and here's the first thing he said. I have found within myself all I need and all I ever will need. I am a man of great faith, but my faith is in George Gordon Liddy, and I have never failed myself, and I will never put my trust in anyone else. To me, that's interesting for a man that's just come out of prison. Nehemiah puts all of his trust in God. He gives God all the credit for it. Look at the last few verses here. When I came to the governors of the province west of the Euphrates rivers, I delivered the king's letter to them. The king, I should add, had sent along army officers and horsemen to protect me. But when Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the Ammonite official, heard of my arrival, they were very displeased that someone had come to help the people of Israel. I want you to circle the word someone, because this is crucial. Notice Nehemiah's self-description of himself. He just says someone. He doesn't say the cupbearer of the king had come. He didn't say the leader chosen by God had come. He just, well, someone had come. See, a genuine, authentic, down-to-earth, real believer never gets caught up with what he or she has done for the will of God. You just give all the credit to God. Chuck Swindoll, quoting Samuel Logan Bringle, who died in 1936, he wrote this: "If I appear to be great in the eyes, the Lord is most graciously helping me to see how absolutely nothing I am without him, and helping me to keep little in my own eyes. The axe cannot boast of the trees it has cut down. It could do nothing but for the woodsman. He made it, he sharpened it, he used it. The moment he throws it aside, it becomes only an old iron. Oh, that I may never lose sight of this." Southside, when God answers your prayers, when he does what you want him to do, give him all the credit. And if you will, he'll open up more doors for you. Let's pray. This morning you've heard the truth of God's word. Now what are you going to do with it? Some of you have been praying, you've been praying. And for you, it seems like maybe a denial. Well, that may be because, like with Nehemiah, before God can do something through you, he's got to do something in you. You've got to change. God doesn't just randomly answer our prayers if we're disobedient, if we're not faithful, if we're not what he's called us to be. He's not asking for perfection. He's just asking for consistency. Maybe you have never shared your flaws, your failures, your fears, or your lack of faith with anyone. Maybe it's time you just start getting honest with someone. Get honest with us. There are no perfect people here. We're all sinners saved by the very same grace of God. None of us are better than any other. We all stand equally before the throne of God. He's the judge, not us. So what needs to change in your life? If you want God to answer a prayer or to bring you people to help you to answer that prayer, he's got to do something in you before he can do something through you. So what is it for you? Right now, where you are, you can pray there. You can come and pray here. You can have me pray with you.